TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 139, and I am Libby, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
Peter from West Hollywood.
Allison from Tarzana.
And Ronnie from Vegas.
Woohoo! I like it when Ronnie comes from very far away. Well, 4 hours away. All right, so this week in the news, the first thing I have is that PBS is looking at airing Downton Abbey the next, not the third season, because third season starts January 6th, in case you wanted to know. But when they come to fourth season, they want to try to air Downton season 4 much closer to when the UK airs, so they don't lose their viewers to people who get it alternate ways.
I wonder who you could be talking
about. I have no idea who I'm referring to. All right. Any other? That's all the news I could find. Anybody else have any news?
A few other things. ABC is ordering a series called Weird Desk that is basically like The X-Files, except for it's the CIA. Wow, how original. Bravo is adapting the 1999 film Death Becomes Her as a drama series, which is strange.
Yeah.
And then the Writers Guild nominations came out. Breaking Bad received 4, Homeland 1, and Mad Men 1. So Breaking Bad has really good odds of winning.
Well, or they split their vote.
That usually doesn't happen, though. People know which episode is the
king. The killer.
There's so many to choose for.
I know. Breaking Bad's been fantastic. Okay. Off topic. All right. So let's start off with Homeland. And this apparently was the episode that split the fandom. I personally thought it was a really fun, fast-paced kind of adventure. There were a couple of mistakes that I felt that Brody was making as I was yelling at the screen, telling him not to do certain things, which he didn't listen to me. but other than that, I thought it was... I enjoyed it. I mean, and then once people started complaining and pointing out plot holes, I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, that plot hole existed, but if you're just along for the ride, sometimes you don't care.
See, I liked a lot of things as I was watching the episode. There were a lot of like set pieces that I really enjoyed, like the confrontation between Carrie and Nazir. I thought, I loved that. I thought that was awesome. But unfortunately, and surprisingly enough for Homeland, which usually assumes that it's got a very sharp, very, very smart audience, there were a lot of things that just didn't make sense. There were plot holes that just kept annoying me throughout the thing. It's like, okay, well, we'll give you these great little scenes, but then you'll have to forget all the stuff that doesn't make sense in between. You'll just have to turn your brain off there.
Well,
that bugged me. That seems sloppy for Homeland in particular.
I agree with you a little, because once people started talking about the files, I was like, yeah, that was pretty big. Well, yeah, and I saw that while I was watching. That's why I was yelling at the screen. But I have to say, the payoff of Brody finally killing the vice president was pretty awesome.
Well, he didn't kill him per se.
He didn't save him. He gave the number that allowed them to do this. Yes. So yes, he killed him.
He facilitated.
Yeah, I mean, he would be prosecuted as an accessory.
Yes. Yeah. And I love the moment where he's like, "You don't get this. I am killing you right now." That was awesome. And then when I realized that, like, that was the point of the entire series, was him to kill the vice president.
Yes.
And he finally does it, and I was like, that's awesome. So yes, there were problems, like when he first finds out Carrie's kidnapped, the first thing he should do is tell his huge gang of Secret Service people, you know, hey, Carrie's been kidnapped. Or, you know, there were a million things he could have done. And the fact that he managed to find a place alone to take a phone call while he's under all that observation. Mm-hmm.
Not just that, but he was like screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, at the time that he was making both the phone calls that he made. And I'm wondering, how is it nobody hears this going on? He's like screaming, Nazir!
And why isn't his phone bugged? Like he's under surveillance all the time. So yes, there were things that I was like, okay.
Wasn't there something in his phone that she takes out at one time? Or somebody?
No.
Or was that something else?
No. They had him under surveillance the whole time. Because he was supposed to meet with Abu Nazir, and he was supposed, so they had him. That's why he had all these people following him, because they are his guards slash they are the team watching him. They're his prison guards and his bodyguards. So yeah, that phone call. There's no way that phone, because he didn't take any special precautions to use a different phone. No. He didn't do anything like that. So yeah, that phone call totally should have been observed by the CIA.
My willing suspension was with them.
I mean, I was too.
When you go back and look at it, it's like, okay. I mean, the biggest most egregious thing they've done is him sneaking the text message to Nazir in the middle of this high level. It's like, first off, they would probably confiscate those phones.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm still with it. That scene that Allison just talked about with Nazir and Kerry was really interesting, because she was accusing him of, she had basically done herself.
Well, and also I think his argument fell through when he kept talking about how he wasn't a terrorist, and then he ends his statement like, "I will kill all of you, every single one of you within some number of generations." I was like, "Eh, that sounds a little terroristy to me."
Yeah, well, that's exactly what you said. So you're a terrorist.
Yeah, so he kind of killed his own argument. Peter, Ronnie, say something, guys.
I was just kind of excited to see. I never thought that Kerry would necessarily be face to face with Abu Nazir, so that was a nice surprise for me. I mean, it is pretty dramatic that it's like a car accident and all that kind of stuff, but the actual scene with the two actors, I liked. I mean, it's weird. I really wasn't thinking of a lot of flaws. Now that you guys are all bringing it up, it's like, why doesn't Brody just do that? I guess I could see what you guys were saying, but I was into it. So, I thought it was good. I'm looking forward to the last two episodes.
Are there two or just one?
There's two.
There's two.
Wow. Ronnie's being set.
Wait, I will say this one more thing, and then Ronnie can talk.
I can't talk because I'm not watching it.
Oh.
Okay, then.
Oh. Well,
no showtime, sorry.
I will say that as... I did not feel that the episode was so controversial or fans divided, because it clearly is fans divided. But I would say the only thing I would say to the fans divided thing is that even though I think that the actors are good and I do overall think the writing is good, I don't know if this season has convinced me that it really should have just been a one season show. That was my feeling when I saw the first season. Was like, wow, this is really good. Like, but I don't know how long you can keep doing this. And this season is very good, but it didn't really convince me. As opposed to something like Game of Thrones, where I feel like the world is expanding and there's all these things. And it's just like this, I'm kind of like, how long can you really keep doing these people? You know, so that's all. But I totally like the show.
As a counter argument, I think because you are enjoying the show, that tells you that it is doing a good job. If you thought that the show was trash and it wasn't working, then you would be correct. But the show is working, so therefore, it's fine to be a two-season show.
I think the biggest misstep of season two has been the whole thing with the... with the daughter and the Veep's kid. That was like,
I wish they'd stop. Weird, because I like the daughter actress. I just didn't like that.
Well, story. I think they were. The writers like her, and they were trying to give her something to do. And I just think that was a bad idea.
Unfortunately, it's unnecessary. It doesn't really tie in to all the things that are happening that we care about. Right.
But yes. It's no cougar.
It's no cougar. That's true. All right, wrapping that one up. Let's move on to Dexter, and this episode is. It was weird, kind of a transition episode, because the big stuff happened last week. And so this week is, we have to find the pyro guy. And that, Peter, I think you thought last week that was going to be the big thing leading to the finale, but apparently that was just one episode.
Which I was happy about. I was happy that that was, because I was like, really? A new serial killer? So I was happy that that was a quick thing. So that was fine with me.
But this one was kind of, it was a little slower. I mean, her whole, Jim Beaver playing Bobby, or who plays Bobby on Supernatural, is on here as...
evil version.
He's just, he's so bad. He's such a bad guy. It's so weird. Because he starts off as kind of a guy that's recovering. He's a good guy. You want to believe he's a good guy, but then he reveals himself to not be a good guy at all. And by the time he's done talking, you really want Dexter to kill him. Even though he hasn't, you know, broken Dexter's code, but what's the scariest thing that happens in this episode is Dexter decides he doesn't need his code. His dark passion just doesn't exist, and it's just him.
You're what did she say? Your dark rider? You're
yeah.
That's pretty funny.
and yeah, so his girlfriend is telling him that he's crazy to start talking about himself in the third person, and his dark passenger isn't real, that it's just him. And he finally believes it, and that frees him to kill whoever he wants, which is frightening, actually, because the way Dexter's code works, that you know that you're safe because you haven't murdered anyone, he's not going to kill you. But now, he basically, if he doesn't like you, he can decide to kill you.
Yes. So that'll be... I'm assuming what we're heading towards is... because actually, I kind of like Hannah, but I'm assuming what's going to happen is it's going to be Hannah versus Deb, and clearly Hannah's going to lose. Like,
yes.
So
Dexter's going to have to pick. Yeah. Dexter's going to have to... Because Hannah is going to try to kill Deb because Deb's not letting go of arresting her. So Hannah's going to...
Well, and the fact that I still think that Hannah, even though it was kind of implied, I don't know if Hannah really can forgive Dexter for killing her dad. Like, even though she knows it's in the best... I don't know. That might be some, that might be enough to make her try to kill him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
No, is her dad. Like,
she gratefully thanked him and cried and thanked him. Like, that's not fake.
I don't know. All right, we'll see. Either way, obviously, I agree. It's the Deb Hannah thing. That's what we're all leading to. Like, right. It's that. So this has been a terrific season of Dexter, though.
You know? I agree.
I really liked it. So
way better than last season. Yes. All right. Next up, let's talk about Once Upon a Time.
I thought this is the way to do a mid-season finale.
Yes, except, though, I have to say real quick, the last shot with them all walking happily down the street was a little cheesy.
Well, but...
I know.
But in the next scene...
Yeah, I just thought that was a little cheesy. But other than that, I did really like this. This was really good. It was tight. They only dealt with the characters that they needed to deal with. They very clearly kind of saw where this was going. Had a good battle. They literally kind of got rid of all the extra characters. Like, the characters we didn't need got left behind.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Others, what do you guys think?
I really enjoyed it. And like you said, I'm glad that they finally went to Mulan and also Aurora. Leave them behind. Let them
Unfortunately, they are going to be going back to them. That's what I understand.
Boo.
So they are not gone completely.
Oh, that's too bad. Oh, yeah. One thing I do have to admit is that, because I know in previous podcasts you guys were talking about Captain Hook. And actually, I myself, I like him because I'm one of the ones who do find him attractive.
I'm sorry.
You're not alone there, Ronnie. You're not alone.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry you have to defend his honor.
Who said she's all alone? Just kidding.
No.
But you know, what I like about what they did with his character is they let in, like, a little possibility of him not being a complete villain. That there is, you know, there are shades of gray there. And I think they may be expanding on that later on. So he's not just, you know, one of the really bad characters that just seem to be one note. It looks like they're trying to develop him to be maybe sympathetic.
I don't know. I see. The thing is, I actually like him. Well, I'm not necessarily being one note, but I like him being the villain. I don't think everybody has to have all these shades of gray. We already have enough characters that have that. So I like the fact, you know, let him just be the bad guy.
I think they're really kind of, I mean, from the way they've dressed him and made him up, they're really trying to take a page from the Jack Sparrow book that he's a charming rogue, but he has a good reason to seek vengeance on Rumpelstiltskin, as do many others. So I think it's going to be...
That's the thing, you can sympathize with his reasoning.
No, yeah, you can.
So I think clearly Cora is intended to be the big bad, but it's interesting to see how long Regina will stay on her wagon of reform.
I don't think that's going to last, especially if Cora shows up.
Yeah, especially
if... You got to bring out the big guns.
Well, not only that, but it'd be interesting if it's Cora versus Regina and everybody else is in the crossfire.
But what's interesting is Cora doesn't want vengeance on her daughter, even though her daughter thinks that's what she wants. Cora actually just wants her daughter to need her, which is an interesting twist to that.
Ooh, I just think it's bad news. Well, it'll be interesting to see if Cora's in Storybrooke now. You know, I think that's what they're leading up to. She'll be the big bad for the second half of the season.
Oh, I agree she's going to be the big bad, but I think she's actually, in a twisted way, she just wants her daughter back. It's a weird kind of thing.
Even though her daughter...
But I think it's a power play. I mean, she wants her back, but she wants her under her thumb so that that way...
Yeah, yes. She wants her under her thumb so that her daughter needs her. I get that. So she's going to try to break her. I'm not saying that that's not evil. I'm not insinuating that at all.
It's a dynasty of evil.
Yes, I'm not insinuating that, but I do think that she doesn't just want to kill her, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She just wants to jack her life.
One thing that's still kind of like, I don't completely sort of understand is the whole Henry Regina thing. Like, why is she so, sort of wants to be his mom so bad? Like,
well, because she's raised him.
She's raised him. She's his adoptive mother.
Yeah, she raised him since he was a baby. I can't see her just saying, all right, whatever, and just letting him go. She still wants to be his mother.
Now, was anybody else reminded of when Emma manifested powers of her own?
Oh, right.
That was straight out of like True Blood, the season where Sookie. Where her fairy powers showed manifested.
Up. It apparently, it's her true love and her true heart or true something or whatever. And we haven't seen her use the power other than like a pulse to send everybody back away from her. But that'll be interesting. I've always suspected she had powers, and I don't know why she hasn't suspected that yet either. But that'll be interesting to see her do something. All right, let's wrap that one up. Next up is Walking Dead.
Okay, I have a word of the day brought to you by Walking Dead. Negrolibrium. When you got one That's big black dude and another one shows up, somebody's going away. Negrolibrium.
I sit your watch by how long the original guy has time, you know? I mean, it's like, okay, they just introduced a new guy, so in the next 5 minutes, guess who dies?
What's interesting... Well,
I will say, though, that if they're sticking to the comic, Tyrese is a pretty big character.
Yeah, Tyrese is a keeper.
So I think he's the keeper. I think the rest were just the testing ones.
They were just fill-ins.
So, yes.
All I know is that that has been the biggest... I went to some sci-fi gathering, and that was the biggest complaint... of the night. Everybody, it didn't matter if they were black, white, whatever. Everybody's complaint was like, what the heck is going on this show?
By the way, that word of the day was brought to you by Derek Hughes, one of the writing producers of Warehouse 13. Otherwise, I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Yes.
It was awesome. Yeah, really.
And forget the black dudes, it's the black woman.
Oh, yeah. Michonne!
Yeah, she's
great. That fight scene was fantastic.
That's got to go down as one of the all-time great fight scenes. That fight scene was great!
I really believe they wanted to kill each other.
Yeah, they did. Well...
I have a question. I read some review where... I want to ask you guys this. I read this review... And they basically said that in that fight, Michonne was the villain, and the governor was a sympathetic one. I read the article and I was like, did they watch the same episode that I was watching? But they were very angry at Michonne and said that she has now become the villain. Her and Rick have now become the villains of the piece, and the governor is a sympathetic one. And I'm like, are you talking about?
Yeah. Whoever wrote that should be smacked.
Totally not that. I would say that. That what she does by killing the zombie daughter is kind of the thing that puts him over the edge. But that's kind of like, and I know this is a much less, not of a good of a show, but kind of like how in Smallville, you know, how Clark would always keep things from Lex. And of course, in a weird way, that kind of makes Lex worse and worse. But that doesn't really mean Clark's a bad guy. Like, I think Michonne does what she's supposed to do. But yes, it is leading to further psychosis for the governor. But I don't...
Sure, because I think that in the moment that she kills his daughter, that's like the last bit of his humanity being cut through.
But that does not make her a villain. No.
Except
and I don't think that necessarily makes the governor a good guy. What it did do, seeing his concern for his daughter and the fact that he would probably lay himself down, you know, lay his life down for the daughter... humanized him, so he's not just this one-note monster. But it didn't transfer him into being a good guy.
After his thing with Maggie last week, I'm like, yeah, you got to go. and as soon as when that fight happened, and once the was it an aquarium or whatever?
Yeah, the aquarium of heads.
Once the aquarium broke, and she's near glass, I'm like, yeah, this is not going well for you, Gov.
Yeah, it was an epic fight. I did think that, because Michonne, before she kills the daughter, she looks him in the eye and kind of tells him, I'm doing this because I really hate you.
Yes.
That was a little bit cold, but it doesn't make her, I mean, you're supposed to kill zombies, so, yeah. I mean, it doesn't make her a villain. I thought it was a little cold, but I didn't think it made her a villain.
Curious, you said that they thought Rick, what's making Rick the villain?
Well, because they said that they're making him so morally gray and not giving him any pluses this season.
That's what I like about his character now, is that he's morally gray. That's,
right, but then the governor's also morally gray, so which one is more gray? It was his point.
I like the governor as a character way more than Shane, even though they're both antagonistic characters, but he's more layered.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
Speaking of Shane.
Oh, yeah, he had his...
he made
Rick
a little appearance, a little cameo.
Yeah, Rick is really losing his mind.
He's done left the building.
Oh, and who would have thought the most awesome character on this show is actually the kid, Carl.
I was going to say, Carl was awesome!
Carl was awesome!
He gets the award for most improved character.
Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was just like, he hears screaming, he's like, okay, I'm going to go investigate that now. And I'm like, what are you, 11? What are you doing?
Someone do a fanfic across thing where we get to see Carl take Joffrey out. I would love that. Staring him down.
That would be awesome.
Awesome.
Well, first of all, Carl has a gun. Joffrey has a sword. I think Carl's gonna win.
Yeah. It's great with the prison and with when she's like, you know, we gotta help them. We gotta help them. He's like, I already did. It's like, whoa.
Well, the thing is, he's more mature than the 17-year-old. That's the thing that's so crazy.
Most awesome scene ever is when the creepy prisoner
tries to hit on the girl.
Tries to hit on Beth, and then Carol pulls him aside and then basically says, don't do that. And he's like, well, so-and-so's together and so-and-so's together and you're a lesbian? I'm not a lesbian.
He's like, but your hair.
Oh, really?
No, but he was like,
not going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, he was like confused. He's like, how can you have short hair and not be a lesbian?
I guess they didn't get much TV in that prison.
Yes. Well, he has been in prison probably for a while. But
just the look of hopefulness on his face when he finds out she's not. It's like, I'm sorry, but no.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, he is way too creepy. And she's got Daryl. Okay.
Well, or does she have Daryl because of the end?
Yeah.
Oh.
I will stop watching this show if they kill off Daryl.
They better not.
They're not going to kill him off mainly because he's the heartthrob of the show. All the women love him. So
yeah, but I don't know how they're going to get out of that situation.
Although
he's not looking good, I'm like, I don't know how they're going to get out of that. It's
although when Merle lied to the governor about
Michonne,
I'm like, dude, that is not going to end well when she shows up.
What?
Because that's why the governor
said he killed her.
Yeah, that's why the governor threw Merle into the pit.
I didn't make that connection. You're right.
Yep. Yeah, because Michonne's the one that freaking took his eye. and Merle told him that he killed Michonne. So, that's why he got thrown into that pit and turned against him. Because right now Merle doesn't understand. He has no idea why the governor turned against him.
I think he does. I think he's got to
know. He's got to know.
Well, he doesn't know that Michonne did that to him. To the governor. Well,
didn't they make it clear? I thought he said who did it to him.
No, he said the invaders.
The invaders.
He just said the invaders.
Oh, I thought
we have a traitor in our midst.
Yeah, then he then he emphasized Merle's brother, and then that was it. But yeah, I have no idea them tied together fighting in a pit against zombies. I mean, if you untie Daryl's hands, he's cool. He's like, all right, let's kill some zombies.
I still wouldn't bet on Daryl restrained.
especially since Glenn killed a zombie.
Seriously,
tied to a chair. If anybody can do it with his hands tied behind his back, it's Daryl Dixon. Yeah, yeah, I have
and
confidence.
Glenn also made a shiv out of a zombie arm bone. So.
Oh, that was nasty.
Glenn is super awesome. He is now my hero. All right, so thumbs up for Walking Dead. Woo-hoo! Yes,
big thumbs up.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Next up, we're going to talk about Castle. It was their Christmas episode, which apparently Castle is one of those guys that goes overboard for Christmas and does, like, his apartment looked like somebody...
Looked like a department store.
Looked like Santa's village.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was like, how can you even live in this place? But, I mean, and they showed that Beckett was the anti-Christmas person, and so it was a little too much, and it was a cool kind of relationship thing. What was the case? I don't even remember the case.
The case was about the Santa that fell from the sky.
Oh yeah.
Right. Killing Christmas. They always kill a Santa on one of these procedurals.
It's never been done before.
So Ronnie, what did you think about it?
Yeah, so I enjoyed, like you said, I liked the relationship, you know, showing Castle and Beckett getting closer. The case meant, you know, it's like they could have just left that out. Because you knew it had to be the other Santa Claus. Except the only good thing about that was when Esposito was like at the Javi. End when he came in on the Santa training and tried to grab him, and the fight between Esposito and the Santas was priceless.
Plus, he got beat with a candy cane. Yeah, beat with a candy cane.
It was silly, but it was priceless. I mean, just that it's Esposito, that was cool.
Well, he's always getting beat up by ridiculous people.
Plus, it was good that the actress who played Grace on Eureka,
yes,
could be a potential love interest for him. She invites him.
Oh,
over
that's right. That's who that is.
Yep.
That was. I was like, I know that actress. It was bothering me. Well, that's true because now he broke up with.
Lady. Oh, how pathetic was it that he was trying to get Lady to like.
Well, she said we're not having pathetic holiday sex.
Exactly.
But she was like,
if this is real, call
me. After the holiday, call me. But apparently he might be hooking up with somebody else. So that's cool because I don't want Lainey to just get, you know, afterthought.
Yeah.
Afterthought leftovers. Sex. Right.
Holiday leftovers.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
But it was a good episode. I think that Castle and Beckett really moved forward a little bit. So I was happy. Yay. All right. Yay. That wasn't that much to that episode, so I think we're done.
Yeah.
Next up, let's talk about Go On.
Yay.
And
you have to make sure to have the right travel music, or you know what I mean?
Right. You have to have the perfect song. I like how their Christmas party got turned into the end of the world party.
Oh yeah, that was good. I just like that.
Yeah, so that was pretty good. And then they came in the RV and picked up because he decided, what's his name? What's the main guy's name? Matthew Perry?
Oh.
I never remember the character's name in this.
He basically decides he doesn't want to. Ryan, thank you. He basically decides he doesn't want to do the party. So he's like, we're going to go to Vegas or wherever they're going to go. I don't remember where they are.
I forget where they were.
But they were going to go have fun and they get the RV.
Up in the wine country.
Wine country.
Yeah, California. Thank you. So they get the RV and they go up there and they get drunk and do the whole thing. It was a really good bonding moment between Ryan and the older woman that I can't think of her name either. But I really like their relationship. I like how they are genuinely becoming really good friends. And it's like the group
are frenemies.
They're not really enemies, but I like how the group is shifting and everyone is. Except for the cat lady, I find her still a little annoying.
Yeah.
She was better in this episode, though, when she was trying to, like, sabotage the proposal.
Well, she wasn't very good at it.
But she was funny. I mean, sometimes she's annoying more than funny. I thought that she was funny, like, with some of the things that she was saying this time.
I really didn't expect the proposal to go forward.
I was surprised.
I was really thinking they were going to do a sitcom thing where... Like, they were saying that he wasn't really perfect for her because I think he's kind of bland.
Mm-hmm.
So I really thought they weren't going to go forward with that, but apparently they are, and okay, sure, whatever.
I like that. You know, and you guys have talked about this before on the podcast, but one thing I like about Go On, there's always like a sweet spot somewhere in the episode that just kind of hits you. And for me this time, it was like when the snow, because when the boyfriend tried to do the proposal with the snow, it didn't work. But when they were all together at the end and the snow started to come down, that was like to me like the sweet spot. It's like, oh
yeah, that was good. And I liked the crazy guy's reaction when the world didn't end.
We're in heaven.
That was good.
All right. Unless you have any comment, Peter, we're about to move on.
No. I mean, I agree. I thought it was a fun episode, but yeah.
Okay. Moving on. Next up is The Mindy Project, which is my new comedy, which I know a bunch of you guys haven't had time to catch up on, maybe. But this was a show continuously surprises me. The only thing I felt about this one was I felt they made the guys overly stupid so that Mindy could come and save them. What do you think, Peter? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, you brought that up after I had seen it, and I kind of see what you're saying. It didn't occur to me at the time, but kind of, yeah. I guess I kind of... Well, it also made them, even though I do believe they're kind of jerks anyways, their whole voting thing, because she's like, I didn't get to vote. He's like, well, you didn't really need to because, you know, there's two of us. Like, that felt a little forced, but it really, yes, it's because they want to get to this new department, you know?
Right. Well, and the other thing is they're making changes, mid-season changes, because I think they're getting network notes and stuff, and so they got rid of their boss, the actor. He talked about it on Hollywood Reporter that he was basically let go. And they're also getting rid
and then
of...
The woman's leaving, right? The secretary?
Secretary, she's leaving, apparently because of issues with the writers or the director or something. She's leaving the show. But, I mean, her, I don't barely even know her at all, so I don't really care about her.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't hate her or anything, but I don't... Yeah, I mean, she's fine. Like, I can
and
take
then
her.
The best friend is going from series regular to recurring. So the blonde that's Mindy's friend that's always kind of hanging around and giving
her... Oh, she's great. She was
I like her.
Yeah, she's in a lot of stuff. I like that actress.
Yeah,
so,
but she's now going down to recurring.
Are they retooling the show?
They're retooling the show a little bit. Not a lot. Like, the boss that was in charge, there were three doctors, and then there was a boss over all of them. So there was four doctors total. And the guy that was the boss is an older man. And he's a really seasoned actor. I can't think of his name right now.
He's like, this is Fox. We don't need old people.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in tons of stuff, and you'll recognize him. But they decided they didn't need him. And so he left with a letter and just said, I'm leaving. I don't like goodbyes. Like, what?
Right?
And so he's just gone, and they're packing up his office. And so now it's just the three young doctors so that you can have that three young doctor interaction. And, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that because I thought the older guy was fine.
Yeah, I agree. He was on Glee, too.
Yes. Oh, right. He was the...
He's the original Mr. Shu. He's the guy who was in charge of it before Schuster gets the
right.
Glee Club.
Oh.
Yeah, and they got rid of him on this show, which sucks because he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's good. I really like him.
Was he funny on this show?
Yeah, he was. It's just, like I said, they decided they wanted to retool and be all young people.
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Well, it's weird because the girl that they're getting rid of is a young person, too. And she was on Gossip Girl, and she's fine. But honestly, she doesn't do much, so I don't really...
They said that she had a conflict with somebody. It was
maybe she got a new show or something?
Well, no. Like, I mean, conflict with the...
Oh, behind the scenes?
Creative conflict.
Ooh.
Behind the scenes stuff. Okay. So that's why she's leaving.
All right.
But anyway, I'm just kind of like... And that might be her problem. She's like, I need more to do. And they're like, no. So she's like, okay, bye. But that stuff going on behind the scenes was a little weird, but they actually made this episode kind of fun. And basically putting Mindy to the side, and she ends up saving the day at the end, and now they respect her, which they should have done in the first place. So, yeah, they were jerks.
And I like the guy, you know, Mark Duplass, who is from the League. He was also this year in Safety Not Guaranteed. I like that actor, but it was weird how... In the episode, doesn't she refer to them as being gorgeous?
Yes. And
like, I'm like, what? I'm like, no. But you're saying no, that's clearly a joke.
It was a joke. It was.
Because clearly the guy from Newsroom and the other guy are clearly better looking. The British guy.
Yes, that's why it's a joke, which you did not get for some reason.
I somehow did not get it. I don't know.
All right. So,
I don't know. But yeah, it was good. I mean, I like the show. I think it's coming into its own.
All right, thumbs up for Mindy Project. Next up, you guys want to talk about Parenthood?
Yes, this one actually was good, but next week looks like it's going to be a sob fest. What do you think, Tom?
I agree, although I didn't buy that Ryan couldn't make things work at a construction site. I just call shenanigans on the writers for that. That was just kind of lame.
Also, now he's taking pills. See, this is... you and I talked about this a few weeks.
Yeah, this is exactly where you didn't want it to go, and I was hoping,
this is what I'm
please
about.
Be better
like,
than this.
Like, you know, so yeah.
The thing with, I guess the storyline we're supposed to be most concerned about was with Lauren Graham going to, was it L.A.? With,
right, with Ray,
with Raymond, with Ray Romano.
Raymond.
And her fiancé shows up to surprise her and catches them drunk and in an, almost in a close moment. So just basically a lot of young, you know, middle-aged angst and not quite middle-aged angst.
I gotta say, though, I really agree with Ritter's speech.
Oh, no, his speech is absolutely right. I just didn't like the way... This, for me, did not feel like it measured up to the rest of the season.
I would agree. I did not find this episode as moving as I usually do. But it looks like I said, next week looks really heart-wrenching, so...
And the thing with the... The thing with Crosby having an issue with the neighbor, and the, I just didn't like that at all.
Yeah, I like that actress, but I didn't think they got to use her that well, so it was kind of a waste, because I've seen her. She's another one who's been in a lot of things, but yeah, she didn't really like get to do that much. So
counting down till it gets replaced by Smash 2.0.
Oh, boo.
Wait, just as a curiosity, though, before we move on, do you think they're going to kill off a cast member, Tom, or no?
I do not.
You don't?
I don't.
Oh, man, it looks pretty bleak in the trailer.
I don't. Oh, they always make things look worse in the trailer.
Well, they keep saying, they'll need a miracle. And I was like...
Well, it would be pretty dour for the Christmas episode to kill one of your main characters. I'll be dead for Christmas.
But they can't. That's true. But then the same end, they can't end it with, and she's going to be fine and okay now, because it's cancer. So... Either way, I don't know how they're going to have a happy ending.
They haven't had her lose her hair yet. I mean...
But she's getting pretty sick. I mean, she's falling apart. The moment a few episodes ago when Max found her on the ground. I mean,
right. Well, that was the reaction of the chemo, though, so...
Oh, that's true.
All right.
But yeah, anyways, moving on.
Yeah.
So, thumbs up-ish for this week's episode?
Thumbs...
Sideways?
Sideways, but I love the show, but yeah.
Yeah, everybody has a bad episode sometimes.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about Arrow. And this week's episode was kind of a conclusion of last week's because they introduced, what's her name?
The Huntress.
The Huntress. They introduced the Huntress and her big revenge plan. And this week, they kind of wrapped that storyline up, which was, I think this week was better than last. And I think that he really, his motto should be, listen to Diggs. Diggs is always right.
Diggs, yeah, that him being his moral compass, because he needs that.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he does.
And just coming to the understanding that one of the reasons why she is out there is she doesn't have a Diggs
right.
keeping her in check.
Well, he thought that he could be that for her, but Diggs' point was like, you're an addict.
Yes.
And you're trying to save another addict and thinks that that's better. He's like, no, but you can't because you're an addict. So that was pretty good.
But that was a good analogy. The stepfather is back and...
He's investigating
yeah. something.
But I like that he's on the trail and trying to figure stuff out. And he claims that he trusts his wife, but nah, I don't think he does.
Well, we're not sure if we should trust the wife.
But I think she is looking out for her family. And I do think she has his best interest at heart. And I think she really does love him. And I think that Barrowman's character, who we still don't know the name of.
Yeah, we do.
Well, we know his last name.
Well, he's
yeah, we do.
What?
He's Tommy's dad. He's Merlin. Yeah.
Oh, right. But they've never said it on the... I know you know he's Merlin, but they've never said, hi, my name is Merlin on the show.
I mean, his son is Tommy Merlin. He's the father, so we know...
Oh, I didn't know Tommy's last name. They always call him Tommy.
No, it's Tommy Merlin.
But but Barrowman's character literally has never said his
name. Oh, no. Well, because they were trying to be so coy.
Right. But I'm just... Anyway, so I'm still calling him Barrowman Merlin.
Well, but Tom has a point that they did have the scene where, you know, I mean, he's cut Tommy off. And so we know, you know, I mean, that...
Well, we know he's his father. I agree. Yes.
But I like the way they've set things up where when Ollie first appears and is very harsh and then basically having Diggle as a conscience.
Yes.
And as, you know, not quite just an Alfred, but more of a partner than just a subordinate.
Well, he's not subordinate to him at all.
Well, he's basically told him.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, he hits him upside the head when he needs it. And
I've actually missed not having the island flashbacks.
Oh, is that right?
As much these last
for about three episodes. Now.
These last couple episodes, because one of the things I kind of liked about how they've used the flashbacks is what was happening there reflected what was going on now.
I think it was because of the Hunter story.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
But we know we're going to get more because you got your Manu.
Oh, yes.
Coming up.
So, can I ask a question? I mean, I saw the pilot and I thought it was okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I was like, meh. Are you guys saying that it is worth going back, watching episode two on? Or are you saying, just watch the last two episodes?
No, you need to go back. I think.
Yeah.
It's definitely better than the pilot. I mean, for one, after the second episode, they lose the voiceovers, which was really hokey and
cheesy,
and annoyed me. And that's gone by the wayside. And generally, overall, the show, it just keeps improving.
Yeah. And
my feeling was very much, and I know a lot of, I think a lot of times, Allison, you, and sometimes Libya will say this about women on shows, but I really felt like, at least in the pilot, that the only thing that struck me watching the pilot was that the actor was cast not necessarily for his acting as much as that really cool scene where he does that chin up thing,
which he did again in this week's episode.
Oh my
by
God,
the way,
that guy's in shape, you know, like, you know, like, but so,
actually,
I'm not sure if I really like find him that charming, you know, like,
well, he's not supposed to be charming. That's his thing. He's not charming. He's not trying to be.
He's damaged goods.
Yeah, he's very damaged. And the flashbacks to the island especially really let you see who he really is. Yeah. And those are amazing.
Yeah, I think what Peter means, though, is not so much charming as charismatic.
Yes.
Because, you know, somebody who's going to draw you in. And I would agree there. I think he's nice looking and he's a decent enough actor. But he's not... There's nothing about him that screams, wow, he's special.
Like, he's not the guy in Supernatural, Jensen Ackles. He's not him.
No.
Right.
No. But, I would agree with that, but the story's pretty good.
But to be fair, Jensen gets to do some really fun, interesting things. And when you're playing a mopey PTSD superhero...
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't get to do fun stuff, really. So, but yes, I think the show does definitely get better. I'm really enjoying it, and we really have our big bad now, and they're having fun with the show by just introducing all these superheroes and supervillains, and you tell the writers just having a ball, you know.
All right, okay, good. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good to know, because I would like it to be good, so that's cool. Maybe I'll check it out.
And just to let you know, Peter, Entertainment Weekly chose Stephen Amell's abs as one of the fall winners. Of TV.
I do know my television male actor's abs quite well.
All right. Anybody else have a comment before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. Let's move on to Supernatural, and this was their fall finale. And I'd say half of the episode's really good because Benny is back, and I really like Benny.
Should we send a telegram to the writer's room and tell them, please, enough with this flashback thing with
Sam?
Well,
I think
the
thing that's so strange.
Wait, you guys saying the purgatory stuff? Because I haven't seen this episode, but you don't like the purgatory?
The Sam stuff.
It's the Sam flashbacks. Just beyond dreary.
Which I thought we were going to put to rest.
I actually got to the point where I'm fast-forwarding through them. I don't care what happens.
I seriously considered doing that when I was suffering through it Wednesday night. It's like, please, they're making me hate Sam.
They are. Let's talk about the good. Let's talk about the good.
The good. Benny's back.
Yeah, Benny was awesome. And the only... You talk about hatred for Sam. Sam's whole thing is he hates the idea that they let a vamp go. So he sends this crazy guy who literally got out of the insane asylum 2 weeks ago, and he sends him to track a vampire, who's Benny, so that if Benny kills somebody, then they can go kill him, and he can prove to Dean that Dean is wrong and Benny is an evil person. And the whole time this thing is going on, I'm like, dude, you're totally wrong. Benny, we know Benny.
We know Benny's good.
We know Benny's good, and we know that Sam is dumb. So, because it's kind of like, why would you send an insane man to follow this guy? He was obviously in the hospital for a reason, and he's treating himself with shock therapy on his own. Like, what the heck? So anyway, Then, on top of it, he takes Benny with him on the hunt, and then he gets this text from his Amelia girlfriend, and he literally leaves this dude in the woods by himself.
To me, that was, like, a little bit too out of character that he would just pick up and go that quickly.
Well, I mean, he could have given the dude a ride back to town. Come on.
I know, yeah.
Something. But and also, especially the second I saw that text, I knew it was fake. And right. I couldn't believe that he didn't question that for
well, he kept trying to call to question
it. Yeah.
But I was the idiot because I didn't figure out who had sent the text. I was like, wait, she's happy? Okay, so who sent the text? Like, I was like, did he go crazy? Because I was obviously watching too much Walking Dead, so I'm thinking he's getting texts and imaginary stuff. I was like, Sam's losing his mind? But no, it was actually Dean who sent him the text to get him out of town so that he'd leave Benny alone, which I thought was a really good move. He's like, oh yeah, I cloned Amelia's phone number like weeks ago so that I could use this if I needed to. I was like, look at you, Dean, being smart. But that was kind of a low blow, though. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, man. But Sam deserved it.
He did, but that was still... But then he has the nerve to blame Dean for his crazy friend being killed. And I was like, no.
That's on you.
You left him alone. You sent him on this mission, you then left him alone, and then he gets killed. That's your fault.
And he gets killed being crazy.
Yes.
Being crazy and kidnapping innocent people.
Predictable, loose cannon that he should have known he was from the very beginning.
And then he wouldn't listen to Dean tell him what happened. He's just like, I don't want to hear it. I'm like, oh my goodness.
The only thing
I didn't like about sort of like the scene, you know, sort of with Benny and the crazy guy is that Benny should have offed him sooner. Why did he wait so long?
Well, because he had a knife to his, he was cutting the daughter's throat. So, right. So I mean, he doesn't, you're mixing vampires from Vampire Diaries with vampires of Supernatural. Because
yeah,
he,
True Blood, where they have super speed.
Benny doesn't have super speed.
Maybe that's what it is, because I felt like, just do it. Why drag it out? Why?
Because he doesn't have super speed.
All of this.
Yeah, he doesn't have super speed. That's why. Okay. So he had
to
wait.
But you know, you bring up an interesting point because I actually thought the same thing when I was watching it, and then I had to stop myself and go, "Oh wait, no."
wrong vampire mythos.
Yes.
Oh jeez. Okay, I watch way too many vampire shows.
But it was still good, and I liked Benny and Dean's scenes together.
Oh my god.
They have just this great friendship, and I really like it.
I wouldn't mind if, like, Sam went to purgatory and they refocused the show on Benny and Dean. But Sam's been such a wet blanket wuss. It's like, quit your whining.
And go away.
I didn't see this episode, but was Kevin Tran my favorite?
No.
It was all about Benny. It was
no,
Benny.
No Tran sightings.
Because I do like Benny, too, but I really like Kevin Tran, so.
Right. I hear he's coming back in the new year, like their first one of the first new ones, because the preview for the next episode is Castiel's back, and
they did show Mark Sheppard.
Yes, and so I'm probably Kevin Tran will be in that episode. If you got Mark Sheppard, you got Castiel, you're probably going to see Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah, but honestly, you can keep. I mean, if we have Benny and Kevin Tran, I don't think we need Sam anymore. I would be fine with that.
I know all the Sam hate, but anyway, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about Big Bang.
This episode was just so wrong.
It was the most sexual that I think Sheldon will ever be
without knowing it
at all. Like, he had no clue what was happening.
I love the fact that they actually showed him, you know, sort of spanking her. I didn't think they were going to go that point. I think somebody else had mentioned that too, you know. It's like, holy crap, they're really doing it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, do you need me to, bathe you? Or are you all right yourself? It's like, oh, I'll be right in. Well, I'm like, but it's so, Peter, you had a different perspective on all of that, though. When you were telling.
I just, for some reason, I don't find it. I know you guys are all laughing and everything, and I think that's cool. But for some reason, I always find it just kind of like I feel really bad for Amy Farrah Fowler, like that she always has to create these situations to get some kind of like intimacy from Sheldon, and yeah. So it always kind of bums me out. It's like, but no, I get it. I get. I'm probably just being too much of a sourpuss on this or whatever. But I was kind of like, eh. And then I didn't love the other side story, which is Wallowitz with Bernadette's dad.
Yeah, that was awkward.
That was kind of a dud.
Yeah, didn't really work.
So to me, this episode was okay. Speaking that the last few episodes, I think, have been very strong. The parking space episode was strong, you know, yes. Like, so.
That was awesome.
So, yeah. All right. Because I agree with you, the Wallowitz and the dad thing and their bonding or non-bonding. The only thing that was I thought that was good out of that episode was when they were all comparing their stories about their fathers. And then Wallowitz's story is basically his father abandoned him.
Right.
And
he's like, you win.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, and
like, the other part of that, too, is like when the father admitted that he was scared of his wife, and you know, sort of, and that scene was good. But most of it was just too, like, too ordinary. You see that all the time where the two men are put together and they end up somewhere else besides fishing.
Right. Yeah. But, oh, but then Penny showing him how to fish is fantastic. Or,
oh, yes.
The, putting the worm on the hook.
I agree. I like that, too.
Yeah, yeah, she's like looking
like,
at these.
Who would we know? And, of course, it's her. Like, that, yeah. That
was... Like, who's the most masculine guy we know? It's Penny. Okay, so the thumb sideways on Big Bang, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Last Resort. And talk Woo! About some tension.
Woo! Oh,
Peter, this is the show you should be watching. Even though it's only going to have like 13
well, that's
episodes.
The thing is, I think that once it got canceled, I was like, all right, I don't need to watch this.
Oh,
like,
but it's
the epic miniseries.
Yes, just call it a miniseries.
Yeah, the thing is that if they had had shows like this one, episodes like this one earlier on, I don't think they would be in the position of being canceled now. I think they wouldn't have lost their audience.
I don't
really.
I don't know that I'd agree, Allison, because this show demands that you pay attention and figure out what's going on. And I just don't... I think that that's part of the problem, is it requires you to think and watch.
Right.
Yeah, but I think that they just did too much meandering around and sticking things that we didn't really care about, a lot of the island stuff.
Yeah, the island criminal guy was wasting time.
The best part of this show is that island dude was not in it.
Pilot that I didn't like.
So what?
Yeah,
this guy, like...
Yeah, the island guy. Yeah, he's a waste of time, but this was a really good episode because the whole premise was they're bringing the family of the soldiers or sailors in and letting them have a couple of minutes to, you know, to speak with their family and spend some family time. And then the ship with their family gets hijacked by Pakistan.
Oh my God, who saw that coming?
Yeah, I was like, what? And so now we have a hostage situation where they're killing the family members of the crew every half hour. And they have to figure out how to do a rescue mission, and Pakistan wants them to fire a missile, but they don't have the freaking launch keys. I was like, holy crap.
What was brilliant about this episode is, this is the pay attention thing, is when you see the, I forget the character's name.
Cortez.
You see her exit the wardroom, and then the keys there. It requires you to know that she's the one who had the key.
Well, they showed her getting the key.
They showed it, but
yeah.
Still...
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people might have been wondering what she. I mean, if you look up and down.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was, and now they put the lieutenant in a bad position because she left the key for the lieutenant, and now
the lieutenant found the keys.
Right,
so she looks like she was the one who took it.
Oh, right. And that look Andre Brower gave her.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh, it's like laser look of death.
Yeah, it's like he will kill you with his eyes right now. It was really, really good because he was like that look of betrayal. Is like, it's you. You're the one who betrayed me. And she's like, I just found the freaking key. and he's like, I don't believe you. He's like, if you are telling the truth, then find me my traitor. And it was just like, whoa. And so it was a really good episode. It was very exciting, very tense. And
we also finally get to see more of the backstory about what happened to the SEALs and why we're in this whole mess.
Right.
Bingo.
All that was really good. And yes. You actually feel like the SEALs might actually be halfway good guys. Like, they were literally just doing what they were told. And then this whole situation blew up because... And then they realized that they were the expendable ones. Like, they were always meant to be killed. You know? So it's like, holy crap.
But that's a perfect example. I mean, if they had instead of putting it all in this episode, if they had given us little bits and pieces, breadcrumbs of that along the way, I think, again, it would have been something that would have kept the audience more engaged.
See, I don't think so, because I don't think they ever had a super audience anyway, because I think this is, it's not, I don't think they, it's so much that they lost, they never picked up.
Yeah,
they
the premiere,
I think
it piled.
They have been doing the breadcrumbs all along, because I had heard once that they had, like, plot lines for two or three seasons, and so I think even the stuff with the island and all this stuff that you do see this, and you and you see that breadcrumb where before, what was it, the other seals, Hobbs, he, you know, in previous episodes, they talked about that the orders change. So they have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, they hint at it, but they don't give you any absolute, like a scene that shows you, oh, this occurred.
Right. Well, we knew for weeks that the seals were the reason why they ordered for Pakistan.
Sure.
From
the very beginning, they give you that indication.
Yeah, and it's in the pilot.
But they don't tell you why. They don't say what it was.
Well, I mean, yeah. You got to keep something.
Yeah, and, well, I thought it was a really strong episode. I don't know. I just think that this show was not destined for network television.
Yeah, it needed to be on another
cable. It
needed
to be on cable. It could have been a little bit grittier.
Yeah, I agree.
But it was a good episode.
All right, so wrapping that up, thumbs up for Last Resort. Next up, let's talk Vampire Diaries.
Woo! Now, I wanted to jump in because I think I come from a different place than where both Libby and Tom come. Because actually, I'm not a shipper of Damon and Elena.
Why don't
but for
Tom
me, it's not about
yeah,
Elena.
Yeah.
It's about Damon. I feel like he deserves better. So the thing is...
Oh!
I am sorry. Yeah, I don't think she fits him. I, you know, like, Damon is a bad person. And so that's where I come from.
Oh,
but
wow.
At the same time, what I liked about this episode is that they made the whole sire bond more complicated. And I like how Tyler explained it, that it's the actions, not the feelings. And so I feel like there definitely were feelings. So I'm glad that it is. But at the same time, I don't want to see Elena and Damon together. Sorry.
I have a feeling that whoever ends up together, it's not going to go well.
Yeah, they got to have obstacles all the time. I just felt like this week's episode had a good flashback. We got to see what a sire bond does on a vampire, what it looks like.
Oh my God, that she stayed there for 70 years because
yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah,
that
counting
was crazy.
I counted each brick. That is a lot of counting. Brick by brick. I was like,
I wanted to know the total. I was like, all right, give me the total. But yeah, just and the look on Damon's face when he realizes how bad her life has been, because he just made that like as an offhand remark, you know? Like he didn't really think she was going to do it for 70 years.
Right.
So, yeah, that was really, he saw the consequences of his actions and he was really kind of appalled by them. And
which is a lot for Damon.
That's a lot for Damon, yes. And then they introduced the concept of they met this witch and she talked about the kind of magic that requires sacrifices is elemental magic or something. What do you call it?
Right.
I thought they said expressive.
Expressive. Yes.
Okay. We don't call it magic. We call it expression.
Right. And then, of course, that's what Bonnie says later. She's like, oh, he's teasing me about expression. And I'm like, oh, no.
that actress works a lot, too, because she's on True Blood and Newsroom.
Oh, that's true. She is. Yeah, I know. I recognize her.
Which, who are you talking about?
The witch that they met in New Orleans.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that was all pretty good. And they showed the flashback of the war. Though I find somebody said that flashbacks are not, what her name, Rose? Flashback are not Rose's friends, because I liked Rose initially.
Not Rose.
Oh, you're right.
What's her name?
Lexi. Thank you.
Lexi.
Yeah, I liked her when we first met her. And then every flashback that we see of her interacting with Damon, I now understand why Damon killed her. Like, because at first I was like, dude, why are you being a jerk? Why would you kill her? And now that I've seen all these flashbacks, I'm like, oh, okay. I totally get it now. So flashbacks were not her friend.
I thought this episode was mostly a solid episode, but I felt like it was a little bit where they had three stories when they only needed two. Like, I thought it was interesting seeing the flashback. I love seeing this crazy sired woman. I like seeing the Lexi stuff. And then I like seeing the stuff in the present with Caroline and Elena having the part, you know, that whole thing. But I really didn't care about Tyler and the wolves and the woman wants to be the alpha wolf. I was just like, I don't care about this. Like, so that kind of brought me down.
Yeah, and Tyler being in charge of all the werewolves, who cares?
Yeah,
I'm like, well,
care.
My thing is, they did all that work to break their sire bond to now be bound to Tyler. Like, I was like, you guys are downgrading here. You know?
Yeah, at least Klaus will take. Klaus has money. That guy'll take care of you. You know? Like,
he has charm and wit.
Yes.
Exactly.
I was like, everybody now being.
there is something building with that, because with the professor needing 12, we still don't know what that is.
Well, we know it has something to do with the Big 12 sacrifices.
Yeah, the expressive magic and all that jazz.
And why he's training Bonnie, we know, we got that. And I don't understand why Bonnie's not listening to the fact that everybody keeps calling this guy creepy. Like,
he just looks creepy.
Yeah, and there's something about the way he hangs on with students. It's a little weird. So that's all going to blow up in Bonnie's face. And why can't she catch a break? Like, really? Come on. So, but I do like the fact that Elena understands. She found out more about the Sire Bond, and she found out what she wanted. And she basically told Damon, these are my feelings. I don't want you to erase them. They're mine. And this is right. I like that conversation, because I don't know that Stefan is completely correct in his whole, well, just erase her mind and tell her to forget you. Like, really? Come on.
Oh, that's Stefan.
I know it's Stefan, and he's such a jerk sometimes.
But he pretends to be the good guy, which makes him the worst kind of jerk possible.
That is my problem. Me and Peter were discussing Stefan, and he was like, I don't see why you hate Stefan so much. And I was like, I think, Peter, you said that you thought that I hated Stefan for a long time, but that's not true. I didn't mind Stefan in the first couple of seasons, and then when he was a villain and he was said, I am a villain, I just thought he was not a very good villain, but I was still okay with him being a villain. My problem is now he's back in the good guy category. He's doing villainous stuff, but claiming that he's a good guy. And that is my biggest pet peeve that I've had since I was a kid. So anytime that a guy claims that he's a good guy and he does evil, then I hate him.
Or tries to control his girlfriend.
Yes, and that everything he's doing is about controlling Elena. He's doing evil things where he's turning people into vampires and feeding them to Jeremy. But he's okay with that. He's okay with forcing Jeremy to kill somebody, but then he gets mad at Damon for sacrificing people. I'm like, dude, that's what you just did last week. Like, Damon did this in 1942 or whatever, and you did this last week. But Damon's the bad guy.
It's not that I think that you and Tom are incorrect about Stefan's actions being selfish and that he is kind of being a jerk. It's not that. I totally can see both of your point on that. I think what I was trying to say was that, and maybe this is me giving the writers of Vampire Diaries a little more credit than they probably, I mean, even though I really like the show, but like, I guess I feel like if this was Homeland or Game of Thrones or Mad Men or Breaking Bad or something like that, and you had characters that did things that they feel were right, and you kind of felt like, well, this guy's actually being a jerk, I think we would see that as, well, you know, I mean, that's the way people are. People have contradictions, people are hypocritical, and that's a human thing. So I guess for me, with Stefan doing these things, it's not that you guys aren't right to think he's a big cad. It's me going, well, I think that's just part of how this person is layered. Like, that's how people are. But maybe I'm giving the writers of Vampire Diaries a little more credit.
Well, you know what? Go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh, yeah, and I was going to say, like, I agree with Peter. I like sort of where you're going, because people, I mean, sort of so many people or my friends and stuff really hate Stefan. But I feel like he's always a person of extremes. When he's the Ripper, you know, I mean, he just goes to that extreme. And when he's trying to do good, he goes to the extreme. So, yeah, it's overboard. But at the same time, I can dismiss it in his character, because that's just part of who he is. He always goes overboard, whether it's good or for bad.
Well, I guess my point is that, like, we all really like Breaking Bad, and I don't think anybody would say that Walt's behavior in the last few seasons hasn't clearly crossed the line, but Walt himself still thinks of himself in a certain way, and we all, even when we know we shouldn't, we still kind of tend to root for Walt. So I guess that's where I'm like, and I'm not saying, obviously, Bryan Cranston is a more interesting actor than the guy who plays Stefan. That's true. But I guess that's what I'm leaning towards. Does that make sense?
Only thing I have to say about that is that I see what you're saying about being human and whatnot, but my problem with it is if he was doing that all on his own, he's fine, but he's being extremely judgmental
of Damon.
But so is Walt.
No, but that's when I say judgmental is literally he's holding up this moral standard and saying, this is what it means to be moral and this is what I'm doing and you need to do what I do, yet that's not what he's doing. If he wasn't being so judgmental and he was just doing that, I would be fine with it.
I'm confused. You don't think that on a show like Breaking Bad, you don't think Walt is pretty judgmental?
No, he's not.
There's nobody on his level.
Yeah, there's nobody that he's... he's not. There's no other drug dealer that he's just like, you need to be like me. Like, he's not doing that. Walt thinks of himself as unique in his own mind. My problem with Damon and actually in the last two episodes with Caroline, who I love Caroline, mm-hmm. but in the last two episodes, she's been very judgmental. And she apologized for it. And mm-hmm. Damon and Stefan's not doing that, but at least Caroline realizes what she's doing. And she's like, I know I'm being a judgmental jerk. I'm sorry.
Is that even though they're vampires, technically, Caroline has only been a vampire for a small period of time, so you could chalk up her selfishness to being a teenager.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, but at least she's self-aware.
Yes, you know, and so guy's like 1,000 years old.
Yeah,
so.
but he's not self-aware. There's no reason for him not to have that maturity.
And see, that's the refreshing thing about Damon that's always been there is he knows he's the bad guy, and yet he will do good stuff.
Right.
Right, that's true, and I like Damon more too. I absolutely do. I guess what's interesting, we've talked a lot about this here, is that I'm not saying that you guys aren't wrong to call out Stefan on his BS. I guess I'm saying that I still kind of understand why the character's doing it. It doesn't mean I root for him. It just makes me go, all right, well, I mean, I guess that is kind of like what Ronnie's saying. It's like, ah, that's kind of Stefan. Like, that's, so I'm not that surprised.
Right. You know, and to step in too, because I feel like, yeah, because I feel like there's so much Stefan hate maybe. It's like sometimes I like the, you know, sort of underdog just because everybody sort of hates him. And I don't think, and again, I don't need to defend what he's doing. But at the same time, even, you know, sort of like with him being judgmental, that's his brother and they've been like at odds for so long. And so it's not, so I can at least understand it. It's like, okay, that's Stefan, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like, oh my God, you know, he's so bad.
Well, I guess it didn't bother. I didn't think he was doing it as bad before. And I feel like in the first couple of seasons, it didn't bother me. Because okay. I thought that Stefan was kind of a good guy. But I think he's revealed that he's nowhere near as a good guy as he pretends to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I like that better, that veneer is gone.
Yeah, well, now it's revealed, that veneer has revealed the darkness of jerkiness underneath, and I don't like it. And so that's probably my problem. All right, we have totally covered this subject.
And then some.
Yes, let's move on. All right, the next thing we want to talk about is Person of Interest.
Are we not doing American Horror Story?
We did not have it on the list, no.
We don't. I unfortunately, I feel it's my fault because I know poor Allison has been watching all. I shouldn't say poor because she likes the show. But like, Allison's been watching the show, and I really love horror. But for some reason, I only watched the premiere. Kind of like Parenthood. I think if I had watched it too, you and I could have talked about it. But unfortunately, I only saw the premiere. So I'm sorry about that. I need to catch up.
Yeah, you got to get somebody else because this is. It's, you know, we sat here talking. Show.
Hey, you could totally
about Vampire Diaries, and we're not giving any time at all to American Horror Story.
You can totally recruit another person to the podcast. I am not opposed.
How many, Allison? How many episodes have aired?
So I guess there's been about 7 episodes so far.
Okay, I could catch up.
Oh no, 8. Excuse me, 8 episodes.
Oh, 8? Then forget it. No, that's my tipping point. Forget it.
But the last one was Ian McShane.
I do like Ian McShane. All right, I will try to catch up so we can do that later. And then what's the next show you want to do?
Well, how about we talk about Person of Interest?
I've heard that somewhere before.
Watch Person of Interest?
What'd you say?
Do we all watch Person of Interest?
Most of us, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, I do.
Okay, go on. I'm listening.
I was going to cut this, but I might not. This is pretty humorous. All right. So, Person of Interest this week was the cabbie guy who was a baseball player from Cuba.
I like the cabbie guy.
I do too. Actually, he's from The Unit, so he's a very seasoned actor.
Michael Irvin?
I don't remember his full name. I should, because I was a big fan of The Unit. I love him. He's a great character on that show, and so he was really good in this one. He was felt very natural. But what was great was Finch taking Bear on a mission, and I was like, Finch is gonna go in there all by himself. I was like, oh wait, he has Bear. Okay. He's fine.
Oh, I freaked out though when the woman's like, shoot the dog. I'm like, you better not shoot that dog.
Kill everybody else in the bar, but do not shoot the dog.
Well, and Bear was like on it. He was like, "You are bothering Finch. I will bark at you very loudly." And yes. and then
that Bear has become like one of the main characters or one of the main
Bear's awesome.
Yeah. Well, especially because he has like 1,000 commands, and so he like gives him a command and he'll go do it.
Bear's awesome.
Yes, but they're all in Dutch, remember?
Yes,
so.
I know. Except they did tell him to heal, which was
weird.
What?
Yes, I caught that too.
Yeah, I was like, heal? What? That's not Dutch. So maybe they're making
bilingual.
I was about to say they're making him bilingual. I was thinking the same thing. But it was the case was okay. We brought in some Secret Service agents, and they were all everybody was working the case. Fosco is way in over his head.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, no.
Lionel.
I was like, dude, just tell them. First of all.
I know. When he was in the car and Reese just like, well, we could have used you. And do you have any news for us? He's like, no, nothing. I was like, oh, great. So it's like, then, yeah, I wish he said something.
Yeah, because I know he's trying to handle him by himself, but it's really not going to work. He almost got killed.
Yeah, he did.
And it's just kind of like, first of all, dude, they spy on you all the time. And I was like, you have no idea.
Clear in the show that, you know, the obviously they're not looking at him, but the machine sure is.
Right.
The machine is keeping really close tabs on everything he's doing.
Right. And because the machine knows that he's supposed to be working undercover, and if the machine thinks that he's off the chain, we don't know what the machine will do. So he needs to be careful.
I thought it was interesting that the machine knows who the head of HR is.
Yes.
Because the characters don't know.
Well, the number hasn't come up. Nothing has fit the criteria yet for them to be alerted.
And
but it's oh, and I liked how Elias was like totally double crossed them.
Well, remember how a couple of times I've said that some of these units are gonna or some of these elements are gonna start interacting
and overlapping. Yeah,
but that was a trip that I don't want to meet you to team up. I want to take you out.
Yes,
because I'm Elias. Dang it.
Well, I mean, he has power. He has all the power. What does he need to... because, one, the group of corrupt cops have fallen apart. They've all been arrested.
Right.
Why would he link himself to a failing organization? So
given
he's like...
leadership.
Yeah, and his whole thing is, why couldn't he just recruit his own cops and build, and then they'll be loyal to him, and he doesn't have to pay off HR. So, yeah, Elias is smart that way.
And it's interesting how the threat can loom over the episode without the actor actually being
there. That's true. He wasn't even in the episode. Oh, that's sad, because I like the actor. I want him to get more work. But yeah, it was a really good episode. It had a lot of good elements to it. I mean, it was probably not their best because it wasn't a huge... It was arc-ish. It's more arc-light.
Same thing. It's the arc anthem.
Yeah.
Arc-light, like the cinema.
Yes, like the cinema. But it was still a good episode. Any other thoughts? No,
I
silence.
Good. It was good, though. I mean, I like
it.
You know what? We have a tiny thought. Carter change her hair.
Yes, Carter
yes,
did change her
Carter
hair.
Did
she
change
has
her
bangs.
Episodes. She's got bangs.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't notice the other episodes. I like it, but in this episode, I was like, hey, your hair looks different. But, okay.
Your powers of observation.
Yes.
I thought it was small.
I thought it was funny
that Finch and Reese asked her about the date.
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah, they asked because Finch was listening in on her date. He was like, it sounded like the date went well. And I was like, oh my God. Gosh. Back up a little bit. All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Fringe. And we're coming up on the finish line, peoples. I have to say, this episode, my favorite highlights was the Windmark and Peter fight.
Fight. Ooh.
That was a really good fight.
And how cold was it for Windmark to tell him what...
Her final thoughts were. Well, because he thought it was going to be a weakness and make him crumble, and he totally slit the other dude's throat.
Yeah, he did.
And it was just like, that didn't work the way I anticipated. You guys talk.
And Peter does a really good job as an observer. I love the way that, you know, sort of he has like the tonations, and he just has it down, you know?
Yeah, the head motions and everything else. It's incredibly creepy. I was actually kind of upset that they had that come to an end in this episode. I was hoping that they would take it a lot further, have him actually, you know, transform.
Yeah, but they
to
said
that.
It was going to be permanent. And
that's the problem.
Yeah, if they hadn't said it was going to be permanent, then maybe they would have let it go further. But you knew he wasn't going to end the show as an observer.
No, of course not. But I just wish that they'd taken it a little bit further than they did.
I kind of like, though, that it was him. I kept thinking it was going to be the whole, like, something happens where they have to detain him or something, and then they pull it out of his skull.
And I was I liked the way she reasoned with them.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty good. I was like, so.
Actually, Olivia gets the award for MacGyvering that little contraption to shoot the bad guy. That was amazing.
As soon as I saw her eye that hose, it's like, oh, dude, you're screwed.
Then the other guy gets, like, she's just killed your partner, and the guy tries to pull the, and she just kills him. He's like, yeah, yeah. Like,
well, for those of you who are complaining about she's been a little passive this season, she's back!
Yes. Well, and the thing that's funny is I got why the guy did it, because he's assuming that she's not a well-trained FBI agent and knows how to use a weapon. So he's like, well, I'll just catch her off guard. And she's just like, you know, they totally just underestimated her, like, all the way around. I'm like, if she's a high-value target from the observers, you should probably treat her with a little caution. And they really didn't. They stuck her in a room with, like, tools.
That's what I couldn't believe. It's like they put her in this room. She's a hostage. And yet they've put her in a workshop that has, like, every possible tool she could possibly want to put something together. It's like, that's very convenient. If they just put her in a plain room with nothing in it, you know.
She still probably would have killed them all, but, you know, would have been a little more work. Longer. Yeah,
I thought one of the creepiest things in the episode was the graphic of the of what the device was doing to Peter's brain.
Oh, when they showed the brain and it was growing. Like, yeah, and then he's like, "Oh, remember that porcupine man we have in the basement? Let's get his brain." I was like, "Really? What's it? You keep everything." But Astrid looked worried because she was like, "Whose brain do you want to put this in?"
Yeah, seriously.
I also like in the episode, like, Jill Scott's character, like, you know, the fact that she kept the truck and the magnet for so long, and even after her mother passed, she knew that, you know, sort of Olivia would be coming. And I just like sort of that history, you know, sort of part of it, and being there that long, you know.
Yeah, her amazement. She's like, you've arrived. You're gonna save the world.
I didn't realize that was Jill Scott. Cool.
Oh, that's who that was. Yes, it was the number one detective.
Number one detective agency, right. Yeah.
I thought it was really cool, just that basically she called Olivia out on her paranoia. I mean, and the thing is, she doesn't realize Olivia has very good reasons
to be paranoid. Yes, she does.
But I hope we see that character again.
I liked her.
In these last...
Well, I mean, especially because she's got
powers.
And Olivia's like, yeah, I catch bullets with my hands, you know. Your little ability to see a little bit of the... Yeah, it's not that impressive. So she's like, if you want to attribute that to a higher power, fine. She's like, I know it's a bunch of bunk. So
it's
she's
just math.
Yeah, she's like, their math is better than ours.
Yeah.
That was pretty good conversation. I liked it.
Yeah,
it was good, totally good conversation.
So yes, another really good friend moving up to the end.
Just the emotion in this last season. They've been dealing with this family unit, and basically that instead of somebody snatching the thing or taking it forcibly, that he voluntarily, based on the emotional appeal, is, I can't lose you again, Peter.
Right. That was good.
Yes. Ugh.
It's good. All right, so thumbs up?
Yes.
Thumbs up.
All right, to make a quick announcement, we will not have a podcast next week because holiday travel and whatnot. But we will have one more regular podcast and then the end of the year podcast following that. So... you guys know where to send the feedback. Send us your thoughts and your opinion of which are the best shows for the end of the year podcast. We can read them for you on the podcast. And you can send us to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Weedonopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.